David Weinberger is the Joho blogger and the author most recently of Small Pieces Loosely Joined. He thinks a lot about this strange new territory we're in the web. Would you talk a little bit about where we are in relation to institutional media?
Well, we're at the inversion of it, the basic broadcast model that says that only those who have sufficient means to reach a mass market are enabled to talk to that mass market. And so with the broadcast medium came the massness of the market. And now that is, on the internet, it's basically an irrelevant paradigm. And it's not just irrelevant, it's a hated paradigm. It's we are rejoicing in our liberation from that. Everybody gets to speak, and you may not get to speak to 100 million people, but that's primarily probably because you're not being interesting enough for 100 million people to listen to you, and that's fine. You know, who is interesting?
A lot of good dinner table conversations out there.
Absolutely, and if you have, you know, 15 people or 5 people who are reading your web blog and they care about it, that's fantastic. You couldn't have done that before in any real sense.
On the other hand, I mean, Andrew Sullivan is up to 100,000 hits a day. That's a considerable transformation right there. And I also wonder, you know, is the power of individual, expressive, passionate people talking eventually going to overwhelm institutional media?
Well, it seems like there's going to be a filling in of the continuum between the lone voice and the institutional medium that's still going to be broadcast. You know, the newspaper is going to be around for a long time. So we are going to have, we already have a new class of op-ed columnists like Sullivan, who's basically functioning in that way. It's a pretty large audience. All the way, I guess, down, I hate to use that value-laden term, but all the way down to the individual blogger who's talking to two friends and everything in between. But we're inventing that stuff as we go along. We're inventing group blogs, which doesn't really fit into any real-world model, not very conveniently. We're inventing audio blogging and video blogging and all the rest of it. So we're in this enormous period of invention filling in the continuum where there used to be nothing but a gap. You had a voice that could be broadcast, or you didn't, and now you can. And that by itself is a important difference.
Meantime, the FCC, as I see it, is clearing broadcast space for monopolists so avidly that they're in effect, real effect, driving voices and curiosity onto the web.
Yeah, and I had hoped and I had thought that there would be instead a softening, let's say, of the media by the presence of the voices on the internet, that we would see the borders getting murky, and instead, just as you say, it seems like we are in maybe a last-ditch effort to take the existing media and to strengthen the wall, to build up the wall, which ultimately is, I think, going to be a doomed effort. But for now, whether it's the recording industry that's not giving any ground, basically, to the voices on the web, or it's the newspapers and the FCC and the TV, it does seem to be we're heading to increased bifurcation rather than a lessening of the...
I puzzle, David, why the bloggers and the web voices in general have had so little effect so far. For example, on the Bush administration, or have they had or is an effect building that we will see later? The Bush administration has been pretty bloody impervious to the commentary on the web, and I wonder why. When does the effect kick in?
That's a great question. Nobody knows. I think maybe with some of the candidacies that we're seeing now, we're beginning to see some of it kick in. But there already is an effect. It doesn't mean that the institutions yet have responded appropriately, but that's not the only place where there's an effect. So here's what I mean. There's a critique of objectivity that everybody knows. Everybody knows the problem with it. It's not really what it says to be because the reporter is always still involved in her or his story, even if you try to abstract it from it. And there's a strength to objectivity as well, which it tries to show us the world as it would be if we weren't looking at it. And right, there's great value in that. Likewise, there's a critique of subjectivity that everybody knows. Namely, you're relying upon one or two people's points of view, and they could be wildly wrong. So along comes the web, along comes web blogging, and now for the first time we have the ability to connect to enough subjectivities around the world, multiple subjectivities, dozens, hundreds if we want, that we can start to give subjectivity some of the heft that objectivity has reserved for itself, that's made objectivity valuable. So if I want to find out what's going on, there's great value in reading the New York Times. I do, and I like it, and I value it. But there's also great value now in getting 15, 30, 100 different viewpoints from people who are either at the scene or who are otherly reflective about it. And so this mass of subjectivity helps to give so many multiple viewpoints that you can begin to suss out the truth rather than having to rely simply upon the objective point of view.
Wouldn't it be nice to integrate all those multiple subjectivities in a general conversation, I keep thinking?
But that's a lot of what is attractive about blogging and important about blogging, I think, that blogs often get portrayed, especially by the current institutional media, as single voices that are proclaiming they're the new op-ed writers. And sure, there's some of that. There may even be a lot of it. But the most interesting thing about blogs to me is the fact that we tend to link to one another and talk about what the other person has written. So somebody will write something. ACMA, my e-friend ACMA, who's a theologian who wrote about forgiveness, and inadvertently started threads that went who knows where, but dozens of other postings talking about that same topic from different points of view, saying that ACMA was right about this, or here's how it looks from my religion or from my stance, or he's wrong about this. This is complex threads that nobody's ever going to be able to see all of. But by reading that mass of threads, you get a better view of what forgiveness is than you would get, I think, if you went to a single source, an authoritative source about forgiveness.
Back to media. I got this off Andrew Sullivan's page this morning. He's quoting a woman named Kathleen Parker of the Orlando Sentinel. She says, "What I once loved about journalism went missing some time ago and seems to have resurfaced as the driving force of the blogosphere. A high-spirited, irreverent, swashbuckling, lances-to-the-ready assault on the status quo." She says, "While mainstream journalists are tucked inside their newsroom cubicles, deciphering management's latest tidy desk memo, bloggers are building bonfires and handing out virtual leaflets along America's information highway." I mean, there's the hype, but there's truth in it. When will we come to feel that, 100 bloggers out there in Iraq, say, or in Africa, or in Kashmir, or in Washington, for that matter, are a better source of what's actually happening than the New York Times, even?
Well, I think that's already happened to a large degree.
Really?
Sure. You count on the Times to do the things that it is set up to do really well, which is to have a global network of reporters who are well-trained at gathering information and taking down people's stories and then presenting some type of balanced picture of it. And that's extremely valuable, but that's a very limited role for what we need to understand our world. Balance is often a lie, because not all situations are balanced. So the Times, et cetera, will always be good at doing that. But the human activity of understanding what's going on in our world has always been talk, has always been conversation. It has never been an individual consciousness, because individual consciousnesses literally can't understand anything. It's always been about conversation. So now we have the opportunity to engage in the conversations that we want in a global world. That's how we understand
stuff. Traditional media types and some impulse in me still says it's got to be mediated. It's got to be refereed. It's got to be guided, edited, not controlled, but orchestrated or something. Do we need a conductor of this conversation?
We need to be able to find our own conductors. And many of the blogs are, in fact, that's what they're doing. They're picking out the stuff that they think is interesting, commenting on it, and pointing you at the source and at other people who are also commenting on it. And in building our blog roles and our personalized aggregations, that's what we're doing. Exactly. We're finding the conductors.
David Weinberger, you're fascinating. Take a deep breath, and we'll come back for some more.